Thanks for joining us. This is Note Pad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. Joining us in the studio is Azil Abdul Aziz, the CEO and Executive Director and Head of Listed Derivatives at Kenanga Futures. Thanks for coming on the show again, Azila. We've spoken a few times before this, but the last time that we spoke was when we were at our old abode back in Bursa Malaysia. Things have changed quite dramatically. Of course, I'd like to do a quick gauge into the business of Kenanga Futures, particularly pre-pandemic, during pandemic, and now post-pandemic. What do we see? The differences and the underlying concerns and perhaps lessons that you can take from this particularly momentous period.
Thank you, Ibrahim, for having me again. Well, I'll start with this. Given the times that we live in, transitioning out of a pandemic and seeing such volatility, uncertainty, complexity and ambiguity, yeah, so I just cannot imagine. It's just so unthinkable. Should there be no established futures exchange? Right? So, Ibrahim, I just want to let you know that volatility is an appeal for futures. Okay, so let me start. Let me give you some of the growth stories that we have seen during the time when COVID struck and how we have actually fared. Now, based on the global statistics, global derivatives exchange in 2021 traded over 63 billion capital B of futures contracts, and that is already a very good growth of 34% from the previous year. Now, what drives volatility attracts more activities on futures markets. That includes hedging, basis trading, and also some of the algorithmic and tactical algorithmic trading using deploying sophisticated strategies on the exchange. So first half of this year, in 2022, we are already seeing a growth of almost 38 billion on global derivatives exchanges. And chances are the outlook remains decidedly bullish that it may surpass last year.
See, above 63 billion.
Indeed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Again, so because of the notion that we're hedging against the volatility of the markets moving forward. But I want to learn more about the domestic market. How have we fared vis-a-vis the global experience?
Okay. So back home, Bursa Malaysia Derivatives, the main operator for derivatives products, it has actually traded a new record high, a 10-year record high in 2020. Okay, about 18 million contracts traded in 2020 and continue to grow further in the first half of 2022. And I think if the momentum continues based on the first half figures, we may see BMD also surpassing its previous high of 18 million. So that's another good growth story, about more than 30% there.
Okay, also the growth story is important, but at the same time, if you look at the volumes traded on the derivatives market compared to the equities market, it seems like it's still a small size of pie that needs to be grown even further. What would be some of the ideas that you can share with us in terms of market sophistication, particularly investor confidence in terms of trading derivatives nowadays, considering that the familiarity of futures is being used as a hedge against volatility?
Okay, Ibrahim, if I could quote to you now. At the start of the pandemic, do you know that the strength, okay, when it comes to equity trading or stock markets, people are very familiar with volume and value, okay? So probably what in the stock market, what is the top volume? It's a billion ringgit thereabouts?
Actually, it was up to 4 billion,
ringgit. Okay,
during
cool.
the pandemic.
During pandemic. Now, if you look
now it's nowhere near, by the way. Yeah, it's a quarter of that. It's about a billion on a good day.
But if you look at futures, what is the determinant of the depth of a futures market? None other than, can I just introduce this, open positions or open interest. Now, if you look at it again, and based on estimates, the total open positions for the derivatives market is now averaging at about 3 billion ringgit. That includes your index contract as well as your palm oil contract.
Daily.
This is overall open interest. And open interest could also fluctuate depending. This is against about, I think, about 280,000 to 300,000 open interest. And if you actually try and estimate the value there, it is close to about 3 billion. And so that is already a very kind of developed, I would say, right? So there's already a lot of interest going on in terms of access, and you know, BMD is already being made available on CME Globex, as I think we talked about it a while back.
Absolutely.
In terms of access. So
that's right.
During the pandemic, what happens in 2020, if we could just jog our memory, 2020, when businesses were all experiencing a new normal, if we could just recap now, yeah, in 2020, experiencing new normal, we had to actually run split operations at the same time, ensuring our delivery time is there in terms of servicing customers. Clients are already accessing via electronic access. Mm. So we were also coping with high volumes at that point in time, 18 million. And 2021 came in, and that's where your, I think it hits the headline as well, retail trading, a global phenomenon. Mm. We see that in Malaysia as well. Mm. So at that point in time, volumes were also on the high side. Mm. And there were lots of activities as well at the same time, and we had to manage quite a fair bit, quite good liquidity, I must say, right? Mm. In 2021, mm. Percentage of market share on retail went up, yep, and so forth. But the big, big test is first half of 2022.
Tell me more.
Okay. It's just like managing a perfect storm, I must say. So you woke up one morning and noticed that every else, all commodities in this world is running short. Mm. And we note that some of the futures curves on the commodity curves are all in super backwardation.
Yeah.
So can I just
including
palm oil.
Yeah.
So we're meaning to say that a scenario where players or people who buy or who actually enter into the market has to pay premium for immediate harvest.
Exactly.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So we saw that
because
on
of
on
the war, say for instance in Ukraine,
yeah,
because
exactly
of the environment that Indonesia is now withholding exports of palm oil, you name it, right?
Indeed. And I'm telling you, Brahim, 25 years in the industry, I've never seen such a market like
oh
that.
Oh really? Really? You can't benchmark this against, say, whatever financial crisis 2008 or anything like
and
that.
And it makes it worse because I'm on the driving seat, I think.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
so,
yeah.
So I do see a lot of things there. And we had to manage quite a fair bit. Palm oil, let me just quote that.
Yeah,
8,000
yeah
ringgit. Mm. Can you imagine that? Mm. 8,000 ringgit.
Mm. Instead of the 3,000 average that we've seen over the past, two, 3 decades?
Yeah. Prior to COVID, I think it was hovering around there, 2005 to 3,000.
Yeah.
And we had that scenario where there was shortage in one veggie oil, and it also impacted the rest
of others.
Why would
investors stick in this particular investment class? Why not just go to another asset classes and try
to
make money there?
Well, if you're a producer and you're a refiner, how would you swap? Mm. You need futures to get the price certainty.
Mm.
You need to continue with your business. And therefore, imagine if you are a seller, you are a producer, you will always be selling down the curve, right?
Yes.
Yeah? So, and then when you see such a big squeeze, what would you do? Can you imagine that?
Particularly when you have to manage a 3 months to 6 months horizon.
Indeed. And that's where the there's the yardstick, which is the open positions that I just mentioned.
Right.
Managing that. Mm. So you have hedges across the curve. At the same time, prices has gone against you.
Mm. Macroeconomic conditions are also important to discuss. Inflationary rates are now pushing up. Subsidies are being put into question right now. The government understands, the market understands the government has to, you know, pump in subsidies, particularly in the areas of palm oil. But at the same time, it's not sustainable when you see 80 billion ringgit, you know, perhaps even 100 billion ringgit by the time 31st October reaches us. We know that this is not sustainable. We want answers into how we can move forward or move ahead in this. And then ringgit depreciation is there. Interest rates are expected to be increased ever so slightly, if anything, in the next MPC meeting. Perfect storm, as you say.
Yeah.
However, how are the players in the market, people like yourselves, Economic Futures and many more, can actually manage the kind of market requirements that is needed right now?
Okay. Let me just to go back to that managing a perfect storm. Then let's go back and investigate. Take a look at the ecosystem. Mm. We're not just there alone. We have three aspects. Let me cover those three. The first part will be Bursa, being the operator of listed derivatives markets in Malaysia. So they were also on their toes. So we have experienced that. And I think they were in that period of time, they were in a position to ensure orderly markets. That's the first thing.
Mm.
And to make sure there's no halt or no trade cancellation. I'm not so sure whether you've heard about some exchanges having to take on a trade cancellation policy because prices of nickel.
I would assume exchanges would run BAU lah.
But you, like I just mentioned earlier, that there were so many shortages in a lot of other commodities. So because of shortages,
name the exchanges.
It was
which kind of exchanges
so
are these?
I wouldn't want to name directly now, but
BMD
I would say that
you're
no. Luckily, we didn't face such scenarios. But they were international.
I'm sure if I Google it, I can find the answer.
Okay,
but in this region.
It's within this region as well. Oh. Okay, so there were some squeezes in some of the other commodities, and at that point in time, we were managing that together with the exchanges as well. So I think exchanges were very mindful as well, so that there will be no default from members, from clients, and so forth. That's one. And from the aspect of member firms like ourselves, what else do we manage? Market risk. Managing credit risk. As I mentioned just now, if clients has established futures positions and that it's against a hedge, and if market is against them, what do we see? More margin calls.
Yeah.
So we were managing that to ensure that no default among clients, and clients needs to increase their buffer. Okay, how wild it is, let me just describe to you. One, in a normal market, palm oil could move between 50 to 100 ringgit. Take a wild guess. In this perfect storm environment, what would you imagine?
I don't know, 3x of that.
Try 700 to 1,000.
What, x?
Ringgit.
Oh wow, so we're looking at 7x, okay.
Yeah, so these are the scenarios. So scenarios when we see that a client are quite comfortable with 20% buffers, it means a total wipe off. So what do? We have to manage this. At the same time also, managing the prudential requirements so that we are able to service our customers and in line with the requirements from the exchange. Mm. That's from the perspective of member firms like ourselves.
Mm.
What about customers? They are even also managing their hedge ratios, also managing their P&L, managing FX, because most of these clients, their base currencies could be in US dollar. And when there's a call in ringgit asset, it has to be a little bit of a conversion there, right? Selling the dollar and buying back ringgit to meet the calls. Yeah, so these are the quite, can be a very chaotic trading day for all of us. But we manage. We manage it all together. But we, thankfully, we did not face any cancellation, any default in shipment. Can you imagine if you already secured a price of about X and then suddenly it goes totally against you?
Mm.
You might imagine people will just cancel out, right? But there wasn't such ugly scenarios that we face. And lesson learned from here would be this is really a trying time, really a big test for the brokers, for the clients, and for exchanges. We got together, we became tighter also in terms of our credit measures because we have to manage accounts. At the same time, we were also managing clients, Malaysian clients who are accessing into global markets in the US for that matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all this made possible because exchanges come together and they have a strong initial margin policy. And I think our local exchange did increase their margin requirements three times within this period. So we got closer to client, built that depth of relationship. In conflict, everybody could be shouting at everybody. But at the end of the day, consistency in terms of service delivery.
Conventional and Sharia is extremely important, but Sharia, I would argue that it is a perfect fit for futures because of the compliancy of the element of gharar, I suppose, in terms of the uncertainty element of it. Do you feel that Sharia derivatives is a possibility of growing this the same way we saw, say, for instance, debt candle market about 20 years ago, where it was ripe for growth?
I think the Sharia aspect of it has been raised for quite some time already. And at some point in time, it's all about trying to get that clarity. Yeah. And what we do here right now is that when it comes to commodity products, what type of commodities, that already is considered incompliant. But on the index side, it's still a little bit of a grey area.
Mm.
And there is a lot of, I would imagine, there'll be a lot of opinions in terms of the index contracts.
Mm.
So for now, I think growing it towards, especially in the spirit of being more responsible these days, can we call it responsible derivatives, and part of that ESG offerings, Islamic is also part of the working that I think overall, as a Malaysian exchange, we should continue to promote and make transparent to, especially for those Muslim community, to understand it in terms of an instrument for that can be used to manage business risks.
What about investor appetite? Do they care? Are they sensitive to Sharia versus non-Sharia futures products?
I would say not only just Malaysia. For imagine all those Abu Dhabi funds, all the Islamic compliance globally. I mean, they are big. They're trillions of AUM.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they are also already embracing that.
Well, how are you marrying your products right now on off on the shelf right now with the market demands?
For now,
yeah.
For now, Malaysia, okay, on our as Kenanga, we definitely be BMD is always our bread and butter. As you can see, palm oil is already accounting for more than 80% of the entire volume exchange on the volume. Mm. It is already a captive need for palm oil, and I can just, like I said earlier, I cannot imagine. You know, palm oil. Let's go back to palm oil when everybody's so familiar with palm oil, right? If there's no derivatives contract,
no, it's impossible to be done.
Imagine that, right? So how would
and we've been discussing this back when I was in university, for God's sake.
Exactly. It's like how long was that?
Yeah. Oh, just 2 years ago, madam. Yeah, baru je grad.
I had a conversation with you 2 years ago. Okay.
But because of this, there seems to be a need for us to actually, I would argue, deploy greater breadth in terms of the commodity underlying commodities. Right. Malaysia is all about palm oil. Honestly, we can talk about other commodities. I don't know whether we have the appreciative ability to actually base our futures product on other commodities quite seriously.
Yeah. At this point in time, probably a little bit tricky because we had so many uncertainty going on still. We have that election coming on and so forth, political landscape and also the uncertainty about the global landscape as well, right? So I would say that on the positive note, okay, even though we have two products on BMD, palm oil is one of the lead product. It has taken the exchange to a new highs. And if you look at the global standards, I was just mentioning about that 63 billion, yeah? If you on a ranking wise, I think we are number 25, I think. Or 35, sorry. So, but it's definitely already there in terms of ranking because of 18 million contracts traded. Okay? So in future, yes, I'm sure there would be, it'll be nice to have other commodities, but I'm sure Bursa is also looking to relaunch some of the products, which is also in their pipeline. But at this point in time, I mean, we're just trying to relate about the existing product and how it has fared under the pandemic scenario and after the opening up of economy. There's so much of volatility and so much of followings with the rest of the other products in the world. And for us in Kenanga, we offer CME products. CME products also, as you can see, during the COVID-induced volumes, can I use that term? Everything goes a little bit more expensive. And for example, gold. I don't think it's like nobody can afford it at this point in time. More so when your ringgit is, when the dollar is stronger against ringgit. So we are very mindful about the purchasing power of Malaysians as well. So having said that, I think elite exchanges like CME, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, did it very timely when they offered miniature contracts of their existing current products. So you have now, Ibrahim, micro contracts. So check this out, yeah? So micro, mini is typically a 1/5 of the size of the mother contract, and micro would be 1/10 of the mini contract. So what does that tell us?
It's a derivative of a derivative of a derivative.
No, it's a smaller size of derivative. And for example, you want to trade crude oil. Crude oil is a different animal, I want to say. It's trading crude oil. You can imagine the volatility. So it takes a savvy or a person who understands futures markets to be able to be trading crude oil. So obviously, not everybody can afford that with the margins and so forth. Yeah. More so quoted in dollar. So how does Malaysian participate in that? So that's why we have that micro. We include that in our offerings, which is the micro contract, which could be starting about what, $500 to $700 as initial margin. So you get to get the feel of trading in crude oil.
Appealing towards retail, I guess.
This is more retail driven. Okay, so for the Malaysian, I think it's still more of encouraging more retail, trying to understand the types of derivatives contracts as well. And the contract that we want to talk about just now, that I just want to come back, nickel. You heard about nickel contract. Maybe you can Google it and see what happened to nickel contract. You know, there was some trade cancellation there and so forth. So these are all very active. So a lot of players would be interested to get a feel on some of this, smaller contract size and make a little bit of course, make money. Of course, that is the main intention of trading, isn't it? So that's one. And then coming back to the other types would be ESG contract. That's for being responsible. ESG contract is also gaining traction globally. This is some of the trends, yeah? And crypto contracts. As you know, CME also now offers a futures contract on cryptocurrencies. Mm. But for us in
only
Malaysia,
on Bitcoin and Ethereum, if I'm mistaken.
But Malaysia, I think we are not in a rush yet. We are still pending some clarity.
I think Malaysia, particularly retail, looks at crypto through DEX sanctioned by the SC. There's only three or four of them. Mm. I think that's how Malaysia looks at crypto trading, which is not derivatives based but straight up asset purchase mm-hmm. or selling.
Yeah, so that's on the spot market, right?
Spot market.
Yeah. So,
but you see, when you discuss, say, for instance, mini and micro contracts, what has been the appetite been like? What has the reaction been like from the investors? Are they familiar? Number one, number two, are they into it, or would they prefer the mother contract itself?
Okay. I'll go back to this. I cannot afford the crude oil contract. It's too expensive.
Okay.
I'll try the minis. That's why our campaign,
Yeah, let's talk about the
enter
campaign.
Enter the minis.
Yeah, yeah.
And earn cash back.
The 8-8 campaign.
Yeah. So that one is our... Okay, we had 5-5 campaign earlier. And that is basically to entice more account opening and of BMD products. I think Malaysian community retailers are all quite familiar. It's also proven in your market demography when you see retail accounted for about, 30% from 15%. So people know derivatives now. So 5-5 was more towards BMD products. 8-8, which I think we just launched it in August and it's going to run until October and ends just before the World Cup. Yeah.
Okay.
So we are promoting 8-8. For all the micros, and if you trade a certain amount, then they will then be given a cash rebate into the respective account. So this is basically to encourage volumes and encourage retailers to start participating in some of the contracts they feel would be impacted, I don't know, with some other fundamentals, by war or by shortage and you know, anything that impacts. Okay, as you can see, I think recently what resonates is the food prices at all-time highs.
Yes.
So can you imagine all those underlying all commodities?
Yes.
So there are lots of actions there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So clients can now trade into those products that is offered on CME.
What about the customer engagement or customer knowledge base increment?
Mm-hmm.
Do you deploy your own people to actually take the time to explain some of the intricacies of the products itself?
Yeah, these are all done electronic already because 2020, like I mentioned earlier, is the year that we embrace and we expedite even more when it comes to
engagement. One or two or on that one. No?
Yep. Engaging, everything on E. So we do that, and then even for ourselves, I mean, we talk to global clients. We can't do the normal route like the physical meetings and, you know, discuss and pitch about Malaysia. So most of the time you're already on virtual.
Mm.
So as far as retail, it is ongoing, and that's when we also run webinars and also some recently campaigns, smaller campaigns like this. We used to run, I remember sharing it with you, we used to run like one big campaign for nationwide, right?
That's right.
But now we thought we might change it a little bit because
a bit more targeted, segmented.
Yeah, more targeted, and there's so many things, like I said just now, in the VUCA world. So many things, right? Volatility, uncertainty. So we thought maybe we'll just shorten the horizon and have a dedicated kind of exchanges that we want to promote.
That's what I think. The 3 to 6 months horizon, not even 12 months, is something that investors are thinking of right now.
Yep.
Having said that, the headwinds of investors, both rich and not so rich,
mm-hmm.
Investing in this climate not necessarily is on their top agenda. They still have to deal with food prices, high cost
That's
of
right.
living, and so on.
Yep.
So are you facing this kind of headwinds severely in growing your AUM or, well, your trading contracts?
Kenanga Futures, we are very, we are pleased to actually share that we have seen quite good growth in our execution volumes.
Even during these trying times?
Yep. It is in line. I did mention to you that Bursa grew about 30% over, right, earlier?
Yes.
From 13.5, that was before COVID.
Yes.
And now about 18.5, and
yes,
likely it might surpass that. Kenanga's growth is in line with that. We are growing, in fact, a double-digit growth from every year that we have seen since 2019. And the best part that we notice is that online to offline is at 85-15.
Compared okay, online to is 85%.
Yes, that's right. And 15 is on, I mean, there are some people who likes to use
Why
the phone.
Why would they? But I don't want to get into that. Yeah. But yeah.
There are some people who likes to to talk to their brokers and get some color, or just don't want execution risk, put it that way.
Okay.
So that's why we still offer.
But still, I'm sure it's driving the cost up. Pricing might not be the same.
If you look at the textbook, futures is the cheapest. is the cheapest cost
of entry. I'm talking about online versus offline, I'm sure.
Online, there would be some differentiation there. Of course, we have to charge a bit higher. So 85-15 compared to the time before COVID was 70-30.
So that
is something that keeps us busy.
Okay, so the headline would be offline transactions have halved post-pandemic.
Fantastic. Good volumes. And we do see, the best part right now, we do see a lot of sophistication in the market. Okay, why so? Because of the, let's go back to that trading range that I mentioned. Yeah, it was quite wide compared to the time before. Mm. And you want to take a guess, what is the historical vol for Pamon? Any number.
1 billion, I don't know.
No, historical volatility, percentage.
Oh, percent, I don't know.
Okay, take a wild guess, between 1 to 100.
1 to 100, I don't know, 10%?
15% was before. Okay, that's in line with soy oil. Okay. Now, during the pandemic, could be as high as 60 to 80%.
Volatility?
Yes.
How do you trade with that kind of volatility? You just
clients has to manage. Hedge has to be there. We have to keep on managing.
Hedge has to be there, but with a volatility range of 60%. Yeah.
That's why the usage of derivatives matters, because derivatives provides that certainty in terms of pricing.
Yeah.
And if you are a producer, you want to have an idea how much revenue that you will be likely making.
Again, gharar.
Likely making in the given the scenarios that we are currently facing. So futures provides that risk management capabilities to actually do so. Okay.
All right. Unfortunately, we've ran out of time. It's always so much fun having you over. But perhaps with the last 1 or 2 minutes, maybe you can share with us some trends that you can think of moving forward. We didn't really discuss about what you see the market will look like towards the end of the year. So maybe a little bit on that.
Decidedly bullish in terms of volume growth. I would say that what is resonating in the global perspective, new contracts for innovation, crypto, right? ESG will be for being responsible, affordability, enter the micros. So these are the three themes that I think will be here to stay in the next coming years. Outlook, I already mentioned, is bullish. And then at the same time, positive and bullish, given the volatility. Yeah, given the volatility, people will always go to futures market to first eliminate risk. Two, to make some money, finding that alpha, right? So people talk about ESG, but what is the alpha for ESG? Right, so it's yet to be known, right? So therefore, there'll be lots of products there that will be moving towards that aspect as well. When it comes to digitalization, I think for Malaysia, I'm proud to say that we are very considered already developed. Although we are operating in emerging economy, we are very developed. Exchanges will be moving towards more cloud. Developed exchanges will be moving toward that path, at least to another 5 to 10 years. Interesting to see how the other Asian exchanges will be responding to that. What it simply means is that better technology, better marketplace, scalability.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for coming over and discussing with us the developments, not just of your firm, but the industry as well. It's always interesting to talk about the futures and derivatives market. That was Azila Abdulaziz, the CEO and ED of Kenanga Futures, Sinar Bahad. She's always a great friend of the show. It's always fun talking about it. You're the only person that wants to talk about the futures industry on my show. It's amazing.
Thank you.
Yes, honestly, positioning yourself and Kenanga Futures as a thought leader in this space is extremely crucial, not just because it elevates your brand, but perhaps because people out there really want to know what the market is all about. So again, Azila, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Brian, for having us.
If you want to learn more about some of the interviews that we've done in the past, just head on to astrawin.com, look for Notepad of the Yesteryear, pre-pandemic days. Yeah, that was the last time I spoke to Azila. We need to get her on the show a lot more frequent now. But until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.